The Rise of Philip II of Macedonia, the Chaeronea Campaign, Part 2, Philip on the Move. After convalescing from his injuries at Pella, Philip marched south in the autumn of 339 BCE. As winter closed in, the weather became harsh, especially in the mountains, and most likely he came at first with only part of his army. His allies from Thessaly and other states willing to answer the call to the Sacred War were slow in arriving. Thebes controlled the route through Thermopylae, and it was unlikely the Thebans would grant him passage to attack their ally Amphisia. Philip did not take the chance of being blocked by his allies, so instead he led his men into the mountains. This was the hardest, especially given the season, and offered plenty of positions where even a relatively small force would be able to stop him. But there were no defenders. Some of the active allies in the Amphiprionic cause, and he was able to station troops in continuum close to the high Graevia Pass that led to Amphisia. When he did not push on south across the pass against the declared enemy, and instead went south in the Phocians, the Phocians were in no position to resist. As far as we can see, they welcomed the Macedonians, remembering Philip's mild treatment of them in 346 BCE, and probably encouraged by his promises of greater rewards to come. Philip occupied the city of Elantea, which had been unfortified since the end of the Sacred War, and offered welcome shelter in a good strategic position. For the moment, there was nothing to stop him from marching in the Boeotia and then in the Attica. The Boeotians had not mustered, nor had the Athenians, both conveniently forgetting the lessons of history that Thermopylae could be bypassed by the route through Phocis when not securely held. Added to that, Thebes was not at war with Macedonia, nor had the Thebans committed to resisting the Amphiprionic army moving against Amphisia. So there was no reason for them to have raised an army, especially outside the normal campaigning season. The road to Athens appeared to be open, although taking it risked provoking Thebes and other Boeotians to turn against Philip, as well as shifting opinion against him in other cities, including his Amphiprionic allies. Philip did not have the bulk of his forces with him. Most likely led some sort of fast-moving strike force he had used in Scythia, and on many other occasions. Surprise was often effective, but it is doubtful that he had the capacity to force his way to Athens and besiege the city, unless the Athenians' morale collapsed altogether. There was sound military reasoning for not pressing onward, and it's unlikely that this war was ever Philip's intention. He had shown his enemy, as well as neutral and allied states, that he could reach southern Greece if he wanted, and hoped that this would soften their attitude and wake them up for more willing compromise. Diplomacy was always Philip's preferred approach, especially in dealing with the big states of southern Greece. So he rested his men at Elantea, started building fortifications, and sent ambassadors to Thebes. The news that Philip was at Elantea reached Athens as the sun was setting, spreading panic throughout the city as the thought of Macedonian soldiers would soon be outside its walls, most likely with Thebans alongside them. The magistrates left the dinner table and ordered the marketplace cleared of stalls and barriers set up that formed approaches to Pinax, the place of the assembly, for a meeting the next day. Soon after dawn, the news was read to the gathered citizens, and speakers were invited to have their say. According to Demosthenes, who saw what followed as one of the greatest moments of his life, no one stepped forward, even though the question was repeated over and over again. None of the magistrates or city councilors or usual orators fond of their own voices came forward, at least in part because the Athenians had a nasty habit of later blaming anyone associated with bad news. But it seems that the call of the crisis on that momentous day was not only for the wealthy patriot, but for the man who first to last had closely watched the sequence of events and had rightly fathomed the purposes and desires of Philip. Only Demosthenes had understood the king and studied him. On that day, then, the call was manifestly for me. I came forward and I addressed you. I alone amongst my orators and politicians knew what to do and had the courage to speak. Demosthenes assured his fellow citizens that the situation was not hopeless, for only a few Thebans, the scoundrels, and the men bribed by Macedonian gold were aligned with Philip, and the king was hoping to intimidate the rest. Athenians must put aside the old grudges against Thebes to seek an alliance with it now. Mustering his own army and extending the hand of friendship, the Athenians would inspire all those decent Thebans to pledge to fight alongside them for the safety and independence of Thebes. This was a war for the liberty of all Greek states, a precious liberty threatened by Philip's repeated interventions with money or mercenaries in internal politics and his conquest. Ambassadors were once more to go to as many communities, but first of all, to Thebes, because Philip is nearest their territory, and exhort them not to be dismayed at Philip, but to hold fast to their liberty and the liberty of the other Greeks. They were to make clear that Athens had no grudges for past disputes and would help with troops, money, supplies, and arms, knowing that while it is an honorable ambition for Greeks to dispute with each other for hegemony, it was shameful to be supplanted by a foreigner like Philip. Philip was once again the barbarian. Demosthenes went on to cite mythological examples of friendship between Athens and Thebes as good reasons for forgetting about recent hostilities from Thebes. He offered the Athenians a plan of action, and more importantly, hope, and he was greeted by thunderous applause and the approval of his motion. Demosthenes was among the 10 ambassadors that were quickly sent off to Thebes. Now the sources for this, The Politics by Aristotle, The Histories by Herodotus, Histories, 12 volumes, by Diodorus Siculus, Peloponnesian War by Thucydides, and The Lives by Plutarch, Philip and Alexander, Kings and Conquerors by Goldsworthy, History of Macedonia, Volume 1 and Volume 2 by Hammond, In the Shadow of Olympus, The Emergence of Macedonia by Borgia. So I hope you enjoyed that, and as always, don't forget to come by the website, summahistorica.com or historyaccordingtobob.com, and ask a question. Leave a comment, check out our merchandise, and if you like what we're doing, please feel free to support us. Thank you very much.